Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to College Baseball Summertime. I'm your host, Nicholas Mart, alongside W. Ross Kleitz. Ross, how you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, Nick?
Doing all right. It's been a while since we have reached out to you guys, but we want to get you back up to speed on what's going on in the world of summer college baseball. Before we do that, I do want to give a shout out to our sponsor, ProXR. ProXR Wood Bats, the smoothest swing in baseball. You can head on over to gourmetbaseball.com and pick up a couple for your summer or fall season. Quality ash product, great bat, smoothest swing in baseball.
Would have saved Giancarlo Stanton a stint on the DL 4 to 6 weeks out with a broken hamate bone.
It sure would have. That hamate bone, we'll get into that a little bit later, but that hamate bone is the number one injury that results from swinging a baseball bat. And you know what? Pro XR eliminates it. Eliminates it. Makes it a non-issue. It's a wonderful, wonderful tool out there. In the meantime, we have picked up a couple other sponsors that I want to tell you about. Pie Pizzeria right here in our hometown of St. Louis, Missouri. You can find Pie Pizza in Cincinnati, Washington, D.C., and Miami, Florida, in addition to several locations here in the St. Louis metropolitan area.
That's P-I as in 3.14. Pie Pizza.
Which isn't a bad batting average, actually.
Or a good ERA for summertime.
Well, we want to start off by taking you to the Northwoods League. That's right, the Northwoods League. The league that is emerging as the go-to destination in summer college baseball. We're going to skip over to the Cape Cod League in a second, but we want to get you some updates from the Northwoods League. And ladies and gentlemen, if you're a fan of college baseball, and if you're a fan of summer college baseball in particular, then we have an individual from the Northwoods League that we will be interviewing just a little bit later in the podcast. So be sure to stick around. When I say individual, I mean this is the individual for the Northwoods League.
That's a fair statement. No other guy you want to talk to other than this man we have. Teaser.
That's a teaser. There you go. All right. Well, how about this? Mason McCoy. Heard of this kid? Illinois Central College, right? Where is that, Ross? Where's Illinois Central College?
Illinois Central. That is in Jacksonville, maybe? I don't know. There's a lot of...
Illinois College is in Jacksonville. Oh, yeah. I don't know where Illinois Central is. But he's a right-hander, sophomore infielder with 10 doubles, 2 triples, 4 home runs, 19 RBIs, and he's batting .361 in the early going up there.
Yeah, that's a competition level that has pitching dominance. To see a kid from a smaller college like Illinois Central leading the field, I know there's some heavy D1 hitters up there. For somebody from a small school like Illinois Central to be pacing the field is something remarkable right there.
What about somebody from University of Wisconsin Parkside? Didn't we talk about this guy on the first podcast?
We did. He's back in our list of people to talk about today, and that's Josh Cirio. 6'1", 225. That's a hefty boy.
That's a hoss. That's a right-handed hoss. 5 wins and 43 strikeouts. To go along with my notes here from our producer, say a sub-2 ERA. How about 1.01? That's practically sub-1 ERA.
Yeah, that's rounding down in the worst possible way.
That's rounding down in the worst possible way. Josh Cirio pitching his lights out. Hometown out of Greenfield, Wisconsin. This is 2 straight weeks that Mr. Cirio has been mentioned in the podcast. We want to make sure that we highlight and track this guy. And hey, let's take a note. Let's ask that special guy we've got from the Northwoods League a little bit about Mr. Cirio. How's that?
Yeah, I want to ask him just not about Cirio and Mr. McCoy, but also the schools that they're getting represented here. The leaders in both categories are from D2 and D3 schools, so that's really good to see.
Well, I won't lie. My favorite player so far this summer overall is Ryan Donovan. I mean, first of all, you and I have talked about this. Your father having done a graduate school study on this subject.
That's true.
Left-handed first baseman at a Hofstra University, 6'4", 210. Can you play on my fantasy team now, please? 30 RBIs, 9 doubles, 5 dingers, 19 walks. You'd like the average to be a little bit higher for the summer, but with that kind of production, you almost don't care.
Yeah, you take the swings and misses with the fact that he's got, you know, almost 30 extra base hits and we aren't even to July 1st yet.
Unbelievable, leading that league with 30 RBIs. And here's another reason why he's one of my favorite players. He's from PA. He's from Yardley, PA, right outside of Philadelphia, which is where I'm from, ladies and gentlemen, in case you didn't know that. So Ryan Donovan, Hofstra University, putting Hofstra University baseball perhaps on the summer baseball map. We've also got another Illinois kid, mind you, to go along with Mason McCoy. This guy's from Illinois, but goes to University of Louisiana at Monroe. Josh Cirio has a beautiful ERA at 1.01. 0.91 is just a touch better. It's better.
Some would say that's also sub 2 ERA.
Here's it is sub 2 ERA.
Yes.
It is sub 2 ERA. This time it's sub 1 ERA to be exact. 29 strikeouts, a 2-2 record. Going back to Josh Cirio with his 5 wins and his 43 strikeouts. Here's my question. We've seen sabermetrics evolve in Major League Baseball. We've seen the Boston Red Sox, the Chicago Cubs, the Oakland A's. Not to delve into that issue, but there's some metrics going on with the Cardinals and the Astros. Yes. Down in Houston and St. Louis. what are the traditional stat points are we caring about here for summer baseball? If I'm evaluating Josh Cirio and Alex Hemmerling, which guy am I looking at here? 2-2 versus 5 wins, 43 strikeouts versus 29, 1.01 versus 0.91. The ERAs are practically the same.
Yeah.
Which guy are you taking in the early going if this is a fantasy draft? Which obviously it's not.
If the fantasy draft is happening right now, I'm going to take the experience, the junior over the sophomore, also the 6'5 frame over the 6'1. They're carrying about the same weight. But I'm actually looking at the intangibles that you're not going to find on the back of the baseball card other than, experience goes a long way. 2-2 record is going to be a little bit of a misnomer. Who knows what kind of defense is being played behind him. Maybe that ERA of 0.91 is 20 runs surrendered, but only one of them counted as an earned run. So that stat can be a little misleading and could also equate to why he's lost twice despite striking out everybody.
So as you're evaluating this guy, if you're looking at him from a scout perspective, from a college coach's perspective, let me ask you actually from a scout perspective, since you know both these guys are hopefully prospects, major league prospects, for the upcoming draft in the next 2 years. That ERA figure, that's more what you're looking at, right? And then you're probably looking at the strikeouts total, but ignoring the wins.
Yeah, I'm going to see the strikeout to innings pitched ratio, see how many Ks per nine we're looking at.
And now, from a college coach perspective, I bet you're almost looking at the wins, though, because you want to, I mean, college coaches still, they still want a gutty player. They want a gutsy player.
Oh, no doubt.
A guy that's going out 8 strong and hanging in there till the end of the game.
Yeah, the coach.
If they can.
The coach in a college program is going to feel like he can put his thumb or his imprint on the defense behind the pitcher. So he's going to see the wins and be like, I want to get this guy every weekend putting up a win against a conference rival. That's what college baseball, that's the way it's shaped up to be. You want your guy on the weekends to win all of their games that they start.
Who's your Friday night starter, right?
Yep.
He's a future Friday night starter, perhaps, or maybe he already is. We're gonna head over to the Cape Cod League real fast, skip over from Northwoods League, cycle back to it in a little bit so we can hone in on an actual Hall of Famer, or at least the offspring of an actual Hall of Famer. Last week, we talked about some of the Cape Cod League Hall of Famers like Sam Fold, guys that are good Major League Baseball players, not the best. We're looking at Kevin Biggio, the son of Craig Biggio, Major League Baseball Hall of Famer with the Houston Astros, tearing up the Cape Cod League, tearing it up. 371 average, just like his dad, getting on base with 10 walks, 3 doubles, a triple, not a whole lot of RBIs or runs scored, but that Cape, they're just getting fired up there.
Oh, I'm sure. And he is also going to be hitting at the top of the lineup. He's got the same build and same style of play as his father. So not an RBI hole up at the top of the spot or the top spot in the lineup, either first or ninth, but he's doing all the pesky stuff that his dad did.
You know, I saw this kid when he was a senior in high school, or going to be a senior in high school, out at the Stanford baseball camp in Palo Alto, California, Sunken Diamond. This guy was a player then. He's 6'2 now. His dad was never like a beast in terms of size, right? Like you had Jeff Bagwell, who was the strong guy, the muscular guy, and then there was Craig Biggio, whose jersey seemed like it almost was falling off of him.
Yeah.
His son, 6'2 junior out of University of Notre Dame, a Texas guy, eating a lot of steak. I don't know, what is it? Or is he eating a lot of seafood? Is it the crabs up there or the the seafood up there in the Cape Cod League that's put having this guy get some weight and some girth on him.
I think it's eaten with the linemen at the University of Notre Dame.
That's probably what it is. Yeah, that's
probably, he probably eats pretty well at that cafeteria.
That is a great point. We're going to focus in on a couple other guys. Javon Shelby. I know this guy. You probably know this guy. 341 average, second baseman out of Kentucky. Athletic as can be. Pure talent. Unbelievable. 6'2 second baseman. Stayed home to play at the University of Kentucky. He's from Lexington. And he's related to one of your favorite Major League Baseball players, Josh Harrison.
Yeah. Jay Hay. That's my boy right there. And I go way back with the whole Shelby family. Coached with his older brother, born in Kentucky myself, and always dreamt of playing basketball at the University of Kentucky back when I was 9, because every...
Even that old?
Yeah, every kid wants to play Kentucky when you grow up there. But the Shelby family is a great lineage. You talked earlier about the Biggio clan, but the Shelby family is right there in terms of, you know, producing good, solid, just hustlers on the baseball field.
Well, there's no question that what he's doing in the Cape Cod League is an act, because 44 RBIs, 106 total bases at the University of Kentucky this year as a sophomore, 525 slugging percentage. In fact, I think he might have been a freshman when he put up those numbers. That's not right. Those are his sophomore numbers. 525 slugging percentage, 9 home runs, 44 RBIs, 312 batting average.
And we're talking about 2 second basemen, the last two people we've talked about. It's just funny how that position has evolved into an offensive, you know, juggernaut. Coaches look to that spot, and it's not just defense first anymore.
Well, we can mention a third second baseman batting 364, senior out of Oklahoma State University, Stillwater product, middle infielder, goes between shortstop and second base. He's hitting 364 up in the Cape Cod League. Hey, those are three standouts from the past, from the opening week or so of the Cape Cod League, who are all middle infielders, second baseman in particular.
What Cal Ripken did for the shortstop position in the generation before, your generation, sorry.
Hey.
Not mine.
I just turned 25, folks.
I think the Biggios and the Canoes of the world are doing the same thing for the Revolution at second now.
I think you might be right. Shortstop's kind of reverted back to a glove man.
Glove first, who maybe
has a little bit of speed, and now second base has emerged as, you know, Chase Utley, Robinson Cano. Yeah, how do you leave Chase Utley off that list, by the way?
Jason Kipnis just had his 20-game hit streak.
Oh, there you
snap.
Go. Gotta drop the Cleveland Indians.
Gotta drop Tribe when I can.
Gotta drop Tribe when you can. Okay. Hunter Williams, couple of pitchers here. Hunter Williams, freshman stud at a University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Sub-2 ERA, only 9 strikeouts, but he's a left-handed freshman. You're going to hear a lot about him, I guarantee it, going forward. We're going to give a quick little note to his coach, Tim Lowry, out of Cosby High School there in Moseley, Virginia, grooming an excellent product. 6'3", 234, left-handed pitcher. Those 9 strikeouts are going to go way, 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 way up.
Yeah.
This guy's going to be dominant.
Is that a typo? Is that 9 strikeouts per start?
Yeah, 9 strikeouts per start. That's probably more like it. Hey, he's still a freshman, so he's probably, you know, still honing his craft. That's the whole point of him being in the Cape Cod League. Andrew Frankenreiter, a 6'1 junior out of Northern Illinois. Here's another Illinois kid in our list. 3 saves, 12 strikeouts, 0.00 ERA. Man, destiny, maybe? Destined for something great? A lot of closers have come out of the Cape Cod League.
The most important thing that I'm reading about him is he's only given up 1 hit.
Yeah,
so there are people like Rosenthal that scatter 4 hits and give up 2 runs and still get a save. And it's not pretty, and the bases are always full, and it's always dramatic. This guy's coming in, and the game is over. You know when he enters the game that there's no chance that you're going to score before the game is shut down.
Hey, Scott and Missy Frankenreiter, you are a proud family there. Of Andrew Frankenreiter. Let's hope he continues that success all summer long. Shutout baseball is kind of the way, well, hey, that's the way every college coach likes it. You give the ball to the guy in the 9th inning, shut him down.
I love seeing guys from the MAC too. As a MAC alum myself, I love seeing, even if it's Northern Illinois, I'll throw all the bias I have.
You'll take it?
I'll take it.
Well, I can tell you right now, we're not going to have a whole lot of time to get to the Alaska Baseball League in terms of those stats. Wanted to let you guys know a bit of history. The 110th, that's right, I said it, the 110th Midnight Sun Summer Solstice game, Solstice.
There you go.
Was played up in Fairbanks, Alaska, I want to say about 9 days ago. Gold Panthers beat Seattle 7-4. Game began at 10:30 p.m., ended at 1 a.m., and not a single stadium light was turned on.
That's unreal. I talked about this before we came on the air. I was about 12 years old when Sports Illustrated did a nice piece about that game, and I just couldn't believe it then. When you're 12 years old and you're talking about a game that's past midnight and the sun's still out, that drew me to the Alaska League, and I never forgot that. And every stop along my journey on baseball, I wanted to go play up there so bad. So I still have that on my bucket list. I got to get up there and see that game.
Yeah, that is a must-see. I've been to the Cape, need to get to Alaska. We don't exactly have all the time in the world during the summer, but that's something we probably need to do. Book a flight, get to Fairbanks. It's got to be easy to get there from St. Louis, right?
That's a nonstop flight on Southwest, right?
Yeah, Southwest, $129 one way, something like that. Yeah, for sure, yeah. We will drop a couple names, actually. Andrew Carrillo, 400, infielder out of Cal State. Chico, he's batting 400. Leading the league is Alex Caruso, an outfielder out of St. John's, son of Dominic and Karen Caruso. And Brick Paskiewicz,
that's a
batting
name.
412, outfielder and pitcher, goes to Paradise Valley CC, where I think Andy Stankiewicz is the head coach down there, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, he apparently recruits other Kowitzes, last named.
<That's>... Is that one of the recruiting rules?
I think
Andy Stankiewicz, your name has to end W-I-C-Z and be completely unpronounceable to a majority of the population in order to play
that last name. I think you would want to associate with others that relate.
Well, Rene Martinez, a catcher batting 400 out of El Camino Compton, who also out of San Pedro High School, shaping up to be one of the best players in this league. 389 doubles, two triples, and a home run. To pace the summer season.
What I'm noting from a lot of offensive stats around the leagues is the frequency of triples. Triples are back in the game, which is good to see. It's tough to say, you know, what the ballparks look like that could contribute to it, but it's just nice that I think the low seam baseball has done a couple different things for collegiate baseball. It certainly brought back the dead ball era that you talked about, BB Corps. But it also is making these power hitters turn into smooth gap hitters. Now, not trying to drive the ball out of the park, but put it in the right center gap, and the speed's back in the game. So we're having triples out of these guys that are 6'4", 230. That's not a body type that is conducive to triples.
Not at all. It is a body type that likes to hang out on the West Coast, because everyone likes to hang out on the West Coast. And that's where we're going to take you, to the West Coast League here. Caden Greener, incoming freshman, Oregon State University, player of the week. He just jumps into the West Coast League out of high school and says, "This is easy." this is easy. 565 he batted from June 13th to the 23rd. Three doubles, one home run, 10 runs scored, six RBIs. He's from Henderson, Nevada, went to Bishop Gorman High School. In our production notes here, it says all around great player with a very quick bat. Yeah, I think that might be the case.
I think anyone that's a rival high school of Bishop Gorman is probably thinking, gosh, we were better at getting this guy out than it seems like the people in the West Coast League that go to college and play at high levels.
So he's 5'10", 180, but he's also only 18. Size matter? 5'10", 180? Is he still growing, I guess, is the thing? We don't really know the answers to these questions.
Yeah.
We're not his parents. We don't know what his parents look like. We don't know any of these things. But 5'10", 180, do you think that weight, that's going to affect him as he moves through college? I mean, Oregon State knows what they're doing.
Oh, no doubt. I think that they recruited him for what he is right now, and he fits a role on the team that he'll go to. At that body type, I don't think they're expecting him to grow into 6'2", 200 anytime soon. My guess, not knowing much about him, is his 60 time's got to be fast. And he must, at that height and weight, be the perfect, you know, little aggressive top of the lineup, bottom of the lineup guy that fits a role that they wanted to go get.
Well, he comes from the Bend Elks, and the second and third players of the weeks out of the West Coast League have come from the Bend Elks. Quite a program. We mentioned them on the first podcast. Quite a program they've put together themselves. Head coach Trey Watt and assistants Kevin Koppel and Jared Norris. This is a franchise that is one of the most popular in the West Coast League, maybe one of the most popular across the country. Just sold for in the offseason for a pretty good number. Big draws, talented players, very clearly. Mr. Watt and the ownership group there, they've done some really nice things so far in the early going up in the West Coast League.
No doubt. It's showing that certain fans of baseball, just in general, are preferring college baseball in the summertime over any local product that they might have in terms of single A, high A, rookie ball, things of that nature.
Just something we touched upon last week. Hitting leaders in the West Coast League, Tyler Davis, a junior at a Northwest Nazarene University, born from Miramonte High School in Arinda, California, played with Ben Cercio, an alumnus of the Lewis and Clark Baseball League that Ross and I are affiliated with, as you know. National Collegiate Baseball Writers Association named him the West Region Player of the Week, and he is carrying it on in the West Coast League.
Yeah, he's second in batting average at .420, so it makes me nervous who's ahead of him.
Yeah, tied for first in home runs and leading in RBIs, so maybe the Triple Crown is in his near future. A guy with a sub-2 ERA, Patrick McGuff, leading the league in wins in his 3 starts, 21 strikeouts. I want to mention Chris Tate, a left-handed junior out of Trinity University. That's San Antonio, not Connecticut. Just to make sure we're clear on that, leading the league in strikeouts with a 2.11 ERA.
He's not a sub-2, so we can't talk about him. I thought that was the rule.
Is he not sub-2? No, he's sub-3.
Oh.
He's sub-3. That's right. Adam right. Klein, 6'3 right-handed junior out of Columbia University in Manhattan. We got a buddy over there who's proud of him. 2 starts, he's got an ERA of 0.00, but only 7 strikeouts.
Hey, pitch to contact, hard or not. People are going to make plays for you at this level, and you can go ahead and try to get guys out in 3 pitches or fewer, and you'll be all set.
Hey, well, ladies and gentlemen, we promised you something a little bit earlier in the podcast when we started out talking about the Northwoods League. We are going to have on the line for an exclusive interview the president of the Northwoods League, Mr. Dick Raddatz. Mr. Raddatz, how you doing today?
Doing great.
You have got a tremendous baseball league up there in the northern part of our country. 20 years now you've been running this thing, is that right?
22. This is our 22nd season of play.
And how many teams do you have up there?
We have currently we have 18 teams. We think we're the largest organized baseball league in North America.
Hey, can you explain your growth pattern? How many teams did you start with? What did you go from there? Did you go from 6 to 8 to 10? What was your growth?
Yeah, we started out with 5, actually, very awkwardly. And you got to remember, we were the first for-profit summer collegiate baseball league, so nobody had ever attempted this venture before. And then the Waterloo, Iowa dropped out of the Midwest League, and they were our 6th team, and actually the first franchise we sold. We were centrally funded prior to that. And we steadily grew up to 8, and then we're in a holding pattern. We never went backwards, I'm kind of proud of. Once we got to a certain level, we never regressed, although it cost us a great deal of money to hold in certain times. But just steady growth, and in 2002, we had got up to 8 teams, and the model was starting to catch on, and now it's just exploded.
What is your summer like? Are you traveling stadium to stadium, watching all of these games, picking up on, I don't want to say your favorite players, but perhaps the players that you take note of the most? What is your summer like?
Yeah, you're exactly right, Nick. I'm traveling all over, Mick and Ross, excuse me, but I'm traveling all over. I'm in Rochester, Minnesota right now. I'll be in La Crosse, Wisconsin tonight, about an hour away, watching a game. Tomorrow I leave for Thunder Bay, Ontario to get up there for Canada Day, which I usually do. I'll hit Duluth, Minnesota on the way back. just traveling all over the upper Midwest.
And in the early going, because what, you guys are about 3 weeks into your season, is that right?
Oh, let's see. We're just about to conclude the first half, actually.
Oh, wow. Time is flying here. Yeah. Okay.
It really is. We started in late May, so we're about 5 weeks in.
Oh, my gosh.
So, we're 36 games in at the halfway mark.
What is the most, what is the most exciting, I guess, thing, anything? It could be a player, it could be a fan, it could be a team that wasn't expected to perform. What's been the most exciting thing so far about summer 2015 up there in the Northwoods League?
Well, probably we try to think of ourselves as fairly progressive. We built our own ticket system over the last couple of years, and we've just integrated into our team website. And to have people being able to buy online tickets for our games through a system that we developed and having printing capabilities, et cetera, was pretty exciting. It was a big venture, and now we're dabbling even further. We're adding a CRM system to it, so that development has just started too. So my life has gotten very technological, although I'm not a techie by any means.
Hey, Dick, it's Ross now. Just had a question about some of the stars of your early first half of the season. Coming from programs that aren't your typical D1 schools, we've got Illinois Central College pacing the hitting, and then we've got, you know, Wisconsin Parkside, a D2 school up there in the state of Wisconsin. Josh Cirio really outdoing a lot of guys with a 1.01 ERA. Just wondering where these guys are coming from, how they're getting a part of your league, and what it's like to have kind of unfamiliar schools to the common person leading your statistical categories.
Yeah, it's amazing. There's been some great stories over the years, and it looks like this year is going to be another one. We have temporary players while we wait for some of the higher level colleges players to get here out of the College World Series and the regionals and that sort of thing. And a temporary player in the Northwoods League has to play a minimum of 10 days, but can play all the way up till June 30th if these other players don't get there. And 2 years ago, we actually had a temporary player who became MVP of the Northwoods League. So these guys can really make their mark if the team doesn't have the capacity to keep them with the roster size. They have the ability to make impressions on the other teams, and the other teams can pick them up if the team they're playing for doesn't grab them or have room for them, as the case may be. So some great stories there, and it's happening again this year.
So, this is Nick again, Dick. The way that you guys work up there, and correct me if I'm wrong, you have a first half champion and a second half champion, something like that, correct? Can you explain for the viewers out there exactly how your first half and your second half works together?
Yeah, we run typical to most any minor league where we have a first half champion and a second half champion. And like the minor leagues, our first half rosters look a lot different than our second half rosters typically. So starts a whole new season, keeps fan interest. We've actually expanded the playoffs this year to include four teams from each division, where it was previously it was two teams in each division. So the interest should wane quite a bit longer into August for some of these teams that are vying to get a playoff spot.
And what else do you have planned, if you will, for the Northwoods League? You mentioned to Ross and I before one of the innovative things that you have implemented at your stadiums. Using iPads, can you tell the folks out there how that works?
Oh yeah, we a number of years ago we created a foundation, the Northwoods League Foundation, and last year we introduced the first handicap accessible interactive venue into a venue which is the first in sports, to my knowledge, of anybody to do this. And what it gave the ability for the handicapped person was to come in with an iPad in front of them, order food and beverages from a dedicated wait staff. They could sit on the iPad and watch any game around the league or the one that was currently in front of them. They had hearing apparatus. And during the specific inning during the game, they had the ability to communicate with the third base coach, who is typically the manager of the home team. So, and they were the only ones in the audience being able to do that. So quite a special in all of our venues around the league.
I think we lost a little bit there, but that's okay. That Ross and I got it, and we'll explain it. We'll explain to the viewers, the listeners rather. We cut out just a little bit there, but we'll get you back. We'll get that info to them. And that is just a tremendous program that the Northwoods League has implemented. And it's things like that that endear the Northwoods League to their communities up there in Minnesota, Wisconsin. So, Dick, on behalf of Ross Kleitz, who unfortunately can't talk to you since I've got you on the phone, I want to thank you for this. This was remarkable. Can we have you back on the podcast?
Oh, anytime, guys. I'm available anytime for you guys.
Fantastic. We'd love to. We appreciate you taking the time and helping us out here. And we hope you listen. We hope you listen and tell everybody to listen to College Baseball Summertime. Thanks a lot, Dick. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Dick.
Great. Thank you, guys.
Well, that was Dick Raddatz, ladies and gentlemen, of the Northwoods League, president of. He started that league, as he mentioned, 22 years ago. And what a success story it is. It is a foundation of the Wisconsin, Minnesota, the regional communities up there from Madison, even into Canada, as you mentioned, Thunder Bay. What a great program, source of entertainment for families, and of course, an opportunity for college baseball players to truly make their mark.
Certainly is our inspiration of why we started a league in St. Louis, and it's going to be a partnership that we hope to keep in. You know, good standing for a long, long time to come.
Well, we want to mention just a couple of names here. We don't have very much time, and we haven't touched upon the New York Collegiate Baseball League or the New England Collegiate Baseball League. But I do want to mention some names because I know that there's some family members and some high school coaches that would love to hear about these guys, and probably some scouts even. Jordan Wilkerson, East Texas Baptist University, leading the league, the New York Collegiate Baseball League, that is, 4 wins, 24 strikeouts, and a 1.48 ERA. Corey Vigeli, probably, is how he pronounces it, left-handed starting pitcher out of Misericordia College. He's a New York product. Vince Appalicia, leading the NYCBL with 32 strikeouts and a 0.38 ERA. How is that second? What an incredible standout. He's a senior at Carson Newman College after transferring there from Coastal Carolina. In the NECBL, the New England Collegiate Baseball League, let's see here, pulling up those stats, if I can find them. Tyler Rulis, a 5'10 senior out of Dartmouth College, another Ivy League product. We heard about a Columbia University product in the West Coast League. We've got a Dartmouth College product here, leading the league in batting average, .450, one home run, 5 RBIs, redshirted in 2015, but, you know, came back and batted .300 with 4 triples and a home run. I'm sorry, not came back, did that the year before. He was redshirted this year because of an injury, but expect him to do great things in the 2016 summer collegiate season.
That stands to point out that what summer college baseball can be. It can be a foundation to get better, but it's also a road to recovery for guys that had any injuries in the springtime of this calendar year that they just finished up.
No question. Patrick Madigan, 6'2", 200-pound outfielder from Northeastern University there in Boston. He's leading the league with 2 home runs and 7 RBIs. Only batting .222, but you know this is still the early going for the NECBL. Casey Brown, left-handed pitcher out of Central Connecticut State University, 3 wins, .57 ERA. Want to mention Tom Cosgrove, left-handed sophomore, Manhattan College, 4-year letter winners, team Cy Young as a junior, and we expect great things out of him because that adjustment of a player going from high school to college is a tough one, but he seems to be handling it A-okay. Well, any last thoughts, Ross?
Looks like pitching's ruling the day right now, early in the first half of the season. Across the landscape, you almost should have rung a bell every time we said sub-2 ERA, because there's a lot of them out there right now.
There is, but there's a lot of 400 hitters, too, and a lot of guys slugging. I want to go back to my man from Yardley. I didn't ask Dick Raddatz about him. I wanted to. Ryan Donovan, keep an eye out for that guy. Hey, Ruben Amaro, if you still
have
if you're
job.
Still, hey, we keep it positive here. But if you're still drafting players in 2016, Ryan Donovan might be, you know, might be somebody to keep an eye out. Local product.
Hometown discount.
Hometown discount, hopefully. Well, anything else, Megan? We'll get Megan Morrison on the podcast next time. She's working for the Lewis and Clark Baseball League this year and having, hopefully, the time of her life, if only while bowling. But anyway, I think we're rambling at this point. Expect another interview next week. We're going to try and get somebody from the Cape Cod League. Ross, any final words?
So far, so good. Mother Nature's been unkind, but I think a lot of college summer leagues are, you know, pushing through and getting a lot of good baseball in. So,
well, I'm Nicholas Mart, and alongside W. Ross Kleitz, and ladies and gentlemen, this was College Summer Baseball. Take care.